Welcome back to the Nocturnal Journal on 720 WGN. I'm Dave Hochstrom. We're here with Dr. Neelam Agarwal, neurologist at Rush Alzheimer's Disease Center at Rush University, Skip Lant, teacher at the Old Town School of Folk Music, and Bob Ryan for Urban Balance. Now, okay. So I was last night before I went to bed, I was doing one of those Facebook things where you figure out how long you're going to live, you know, and I answered all these questions. And it said I was going to live to be like 104 and stuff. So you have the term, what is it called? Super agers.
Yeah.
Tell us about that and how you guys all work in this now with people living longer.
Oh, yeah. You know, it's right. The term is super agers. These are people who are living well into older years. 85 and older. We have 100-year-olds living well. And, you know, we're seeing more and more of really, really active seniors functionally, basically walking well, speaking well, memory. So this is really, you know, this is an important thing because as we see more of this, then the idea that memory loss is inevitable and it comes with aging, you have to start relooking at everything. And it's starting to reframe this, you know, what is that? What is it about this person who could live to 102 versus somebody at 55 who's having trouble? What's happening? And I think that's the question a lot of people are seeing around them. But doctors, we're wondering, what is it? What makes someone really super age well? So one of the things, you know, because I just had this question today. I gave a presentation today. And I said, listen, one of it, yes, it is genetics to an extent. It is. Your genes. But it's not everything. And that's what people forget. And I say that so that you think about what can you do again, even though it's genetics can't change, but what can you do so that you can kind of make the odds better that you're going to go into older age well? Genetics is definitely there, family history of old genes. People live old. The other thing that's very interesting with people is that they have certain lifestyle habits that they have maintained over their life. And it doesn't have to start all the time middle age. Some people have started at 65 and got things going, but here it is. Exercise. They walk. They're active. They move. They dance. They do something. The other thing is how they look at life. What is their attitude towards life and living? And I cannot stress this enough. How do you view things?
That's almost number one.
Exactly right. You know, and you're right. It's how are you looking at things? How do you process things? You know, positive attitudes, the can-do attitude, interesting. You know, these people are interested in life. Their curiosity is there. They want to know. And I think that's it. Again, that really, really gets their brain going, brain working in different areas, trying to process different material. The other thing is a sense of purpose. I'm going to do so. I have something. I'm going to do something. And I think when people lose that, that's really tragic because when you see that, things go down very quickly in health. Doctors see it all the time. So, you know, you have the sense of, you know, positivity. I have a sense of purpose. I move around. I eat as best as I can. I eat well. And basically, there, you know, that's how, and genetics, right? And that's how we're seeing the super agers make it. And they're doing great. And they're doing great. And they're fabulous to see. And they're a role model for all people to see that. Yeah.
Do you have an age frame for super agers?
I think you're 85 and older in our minds, you know, 85 and older. When you start seeing people reach 85 with really no issues in thinking and cognition, that we would say dementia.
I guess you're right.
They get tight. You know, they're stronger. They're like the hardy. The hardy. Mm-hmm.
That's my parents, yeah.
You know, if you
yeah.
make it, you know, one of my patients says, I'm gunning for 85. And I said, really? I'm going for 85 because once I make that 85, then I know I've got some years, you know?
Interesting.
Yeah. I think you're right because I'm thinking of the two individuals I know over 100 mm-hmm. who are, you know, at 99 getting into art and doing the plays at the facility where they're living.
Exactly.
But 85 probably really is. I mean,
once you hit that. But see, I love when I hear that. 99, art and plays, maybe I've never done that before. Thank you. And art and plays. And the question is, well, why would you want to do that? Why not? And that is probably what got them to 99, that they had the curiosity, the interest, and to pick up something. So that was one thing.
To keep learning.
Exactly.
That's
keep,
this brain go. Stimulation exactly is right. Very, very important.
You mentioned the sense of purpose. I don't know if any of you saw the program on the nightly news on Channel 11, public television, I think a week ago. They had... There's a group, I guess, in California, maybe a national group, that brings together musicians to play together, and in various stages of dementia and also Parkinson's disease. But the one that interested me was this: when they talked about what they got out of it, one of them said, going back to your point about purpose, mm-hmm. he said, "It gives playing together gives me a purpose." I'm not sure what that purpose is.
Exactly, but he
but
felt it.
But it gives me a sense of purpose, and that really propelled him forward. And that's exactly. I think that's what's crucial about it.
And you know, and that's when you I see patients. I have an active practice, and I'm always trying to figure out what's the purpose here. Let's go right there. If it means I want to be with my grandchildren, I am talking to you about your grandchildren. You know, I am going into what is it about you that you really want to keep doing, that you really like, that you're doing this for, and we then think, we talk around that, because that is it. If I can make sure that we can do that, people rise to the occasion, and they do, and it's fascinating to see, and it's very gratifying to see it.
And of course, the spirit of music for all of you feeds this. Can you elaborate that? And I want to mention with Skip, I mean, you thought therapy through the expressive arts at Concordia for 7 years.
We had a wonderful class at Concordia, graduate class for social workers, and we had each week there was a section on different form of expressive art. So I did I introduced the series with music, and then we had people do photography, dance, poetry. Must be a few others in there, but the point I made was that music is so essential to our being that there are few things that reach people more deeply. Mm-hmm. Music reaches people at a level beyond, going back to your point about words, beyond language. Things that can't be expressed any other way can be expressed through music. And so the points I made was that first of all, it connects you with yourself. One of the things that I had read at the time, and you folks might know more about this than I do, that if you played music for 20 minutes, listen to music for 20 minutes and do nothing else, that has an effect on you similar to meditation. It soothes you. So individually, yes. It helps you. It helps a therapist connect with patients because of common interests, but also because, again, you're relating not on a rational level but on an emotional level. And the one that I was most interested in was it connects you with a community of music. If you can connect with, whether it's a neighborhood choir, whether it's one of the many little sub-communities we have at the Old Town School, like you mentioned when we talked beforehand, being part of the old-timey ensemble. Very often people come to the school and we will become part of a class and then realize they're not really part of a class. They're part of a group of people.
Part of a movement.
who get together regularly, and sometimes the class ends, but the group continues. Mm-hmm. And that's a rewarding kind of experience that provides life satisfaction. That there was an article in the New York Review of Books recently about life satisfaction, about the two kinds of satisfaction. One is experience, and the terminology that I think I'm using is a little different, but the experience itself and then your evaluation of the experience. So the experience itself can be gratifying, but mm-hmm. what's more important is your evaluation of that experience. Mm-hmm. So
exactly.
you can enjoy doing something immediately, but if after, for example, eating too much. but then afterwards,
never in February in Chicago.
but really, really counts is your sense afterwards that you've done something
exactly.
that is rewarding to mm-hmm. you and the people around you.
Skip, who's your oldest student?
Oh boy. Yeah. Well, actually, I'm not sure any of them are my age. I'm 77 right now.
Wow.
But I've had students certainly in their 80s. I had a mm-hmm. woman who was a piano player who was in her 80s, mm-hmm. and And I mentioned to you, Dave, that I have not been able to contact this person. I'm afraid I know why. I had a person who took my classes, my harmonica classes, specifically to ward off dementia. And he took several classes, and he was doing very well. And then I lost track of him, and I followed up with his phone number recently for this. And his wife answered, and never. I said, I'd like to talk to him and find out what happened, and she never called back. Mm-hmm. And it may well be for that reason.
Is there any, this is not on my list of questions, but as you're talking, is there any one instrument that registers with patients? I mean, I remember one incident with my mom, they wanted to bring in a harp player. Uh-huh. My mom didn't want that.
Too early.
Yeah. But guitar or harmonica, is there a sound or a tone?
That's a really good question. Harmonica, is, of course, a very accessible instrument, and it's probably the one you can go farthest on most quickly. You folks may have a better sense of that than I do.
Well, any kind of percussion instrument. Tambourines. We've made taking water bottles and a few beads and put a handle, and it's a very easy shaker, very long, like 4-foot sticks. You could sit in a chair and tap on the floor.
Right.
Any kind of drums.
For activity.
Very easy. To create wonderful chaos.
Yeah.
Quickly.
Right.
Okay, we're going to be back. I want to play some music when we come back, so don't go away on Nocturnal Journal.
Sweet pea, apple of my eye, I don't know when and I don't know why. You're the only reason that I keep on coming home. Sweet peas, all this about, don't get your way, you do is fuss and pout. You're the only reason that I keep on coming home. Trying to stay humble, but I never think before I say. Sweet pea, keeper of my soul, I know sometimes I'm out of control, but you're the only reason that I keep on coming. You're the
wonderful. Welcome back to the Nocturnal Journal. That's Bob Ryan, art psychotherapist for Urban Balance, and Skip Lant on harmonica from the Old Town School. Mm-hmm. Now, tell us why you picked that song and how it works for you.
Well, in particular, this is a song, I think because of the rhythm in it, that none of my resonants had ever heard it before, but bounced and moved and really... The basic bum, bum, primal kind of beat there really responded to them. I don't play it, but the other song they really liked was Billie Jean by Michael Jackson.
Billie Jean.
Oh, yeah. For chair exercises, they're all like up and they're... You get the other staff, the resident assistants, come around, looking around. You're playing Michael Jackson.
That's it.
I mean, I know other people in facilities in Colorado, and they spend all their time playing Beatles stuff and Monkees things, and still here in Illinois, people want me to play Frank Sinatra and Tony Bennett.
Yeah, that's so interesting.
Yeah, there was that documentary. I just can't remember the name of it. It was about the residence home where they taught them all like the Clash and stuff. That was like about 4 or 5 years ago. But it was like, and they all had a choir and they kind of followed them through a couple years and stuff. Doctor, tell us what you were telling us during the break about the harp and the harp
study. Well, you know, when you mentioned the harp, it brought back to my mind of what we did, a little experiment, but we wanted to show what happens with music in the brain. And I sit on a board called KV-265, and this was founded by an astronomer over at the Adler, and Jose Francisco Salgado. And he's very interested in science and art. And we kind of branched off and said, let's go and do music and art and music in the mind. So we had two harpists come in, and they play together. And they came into Northwestern, and one was actually had an EEG put on her, and the music was being played. And we wanted to see what were the brain waves, just by her passively listening, okay? And we saw it was very interesting. Yeah, we saw that the brain waves, when she was listening to the music, where activation was. Because, again, she's not playing now. They play duets, okay? Then we did the same thing when we had her in an fMRI. So it's a special scan that shows which parts of the brain activate, not just a picture like a structural MR. And it was very interesting because even with her eyes closed, this is important, even with her eyes closed, and we expected to see the brain activation in the music centers, if you will, but guess what else lit up? The occipital lobes in the back, which is the visual area.
Oh, okay.
She was having imagery going on of what her partner was playing. So speaking to when we were talking about music and what it does, it is activating different parts. Even passive listening is activating different parts of your brain. And I think that was one of the things, you know, it's on the website. You can check that out.
And the website is?
KV265.org. But check that out because it shows people, put the music on. Your brain, it's not like it's just going in one ear out the other. No, there's activation going on. It was a really neat thing to do. And we're looking at doing more programming in that area, for sure. Music in the brain.
I was reading a little bit last night, Musicophilia by Oliver Sacks.
Oh, yeah.
And
our star neurologist right there, you know it. Yeah.
But, I mean, there was a thing in there about playing piano at 88, and every family member, and we're going to take calls after the 9 o'clock news, but every family member is hopeful, you know, and optimistic and stuff. And my mom played piano for years, and is it a bad idea for me to try to, even though her mobility is a little bad, but she's got steady hands, is it a bad idea to try to, I was just inspired by reading this, to get her on the piano again, or is that a lost cause?
You know, and again, I want to hear from our music experts here, but I tell you what I say to people. Put them in front of a keyboard, put them in front of a piano, and just watch what they do. That's it. That's it.
I'd
watch
the
what
thing.
They do. And sometimes you may just have the right hand going, because I play piano, so let the right hand go, let the left hand go, see if they're doing chord, whatever they want to do. But that, to me, counts. Some people won't even touch it. Some people will want to imitate what you do. I've done that, where I've played. And we two on a bench, and before you know it, the fingers start going. Go with it.
Wow.
That's the attitude. Go with it.
That's a very important point. In almost any activity, you have to do it with your loved one because that shows that it's worth your time.
Yeah.
So you sit down at the piano and try and play chopsticks if you don't play or whatever it is that you can remember. And they might play too. It's the same thing with art. People, I never do art, but you just sit and just say, watch me. And eventually they'll pick up a brush and start.
Exactly.
Going
it's that imitation. It's that get rid of the language, get rid of the instruction, show me, watch me. And again, it's activating a different area of the brain. And if it happens, go with it. And sit there and still paint.
And that's the standard teaching mode too. At all ages. That is, show. I do it, and you do it.
Mm-hmm.
I do
mm-hmm.
it first, then you follow it. Mm-hmm. And if people are in our case with classes, very often people have not taken a musical instrument before. Sometimes they're an older person who's never played anything, and with the harmonica, if that happens, and if they're nervous, I have a number of people play with them. We all play together. Mm-hmm. We all do this. I'll do it, and all of you do it together.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we're going to take a break for the news. We'll be back with more Nocturnal Journal, and we'll take some phone calls after this. This break.
Oh, we come from Alabama with the banjo on my knee. Bound for Louisiana for my true love for to see. Rain all night the day I left, weather it was dry. Sun so hot I froze to death. Susanna, don't you cry. Alabama with this banjo.
guitar. Had a dream the other night when everything was still. Thought I saw Susanna Deer coming down the hill. The buckwheat cake was in her mouth, a tear was in her eye. Said, I'm coming from the south, Susanna, don't you cry. Oh, 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 Susanna, now don't you cry for me. I come from Alabama with this banjo on my knee. Oh. Go ahead. Soon we'll be in New Orleans, and then I'll look around. When I find Susanna Deer, I'll fall down on the ground. If I do not find you there, I will surely die. When I'm dead and buried, Susanna, don't you cry. Oh, oh, Susanna, now don't you cry for me. I come from Alabama.
So we counterbalance things like that with the Wilco Ensemble. It's a good counterbalance.
I think everything's okay now. Welcome back to the Nocturnal Journal. They were doing station maintenance here, I might as well be honest. And we're all maintained and we're ready to go. I wanted to read this quote again, the last thing I'll bring up with Oliver Sacks about music therapy. He goes, the aim of music therapy, it seeks to address the emotions, cognitive powers, thoughts and memories, the surviving self of the patient, to stimulate these and bring them to the fore. I love this. It aims to enrich and enlarge existence, to give freedom, stability, organization, and focus. Mm-hmm. Is that like a really lofty thing for music therapy? I mean, that's a lot. That's a lot
no,
in that.
No,
that can all be done.
No, it's not lofty. The brain works like that. That is what, you know, and this is just one medium, music, but the brain works like that. It is all interconnected. Things are working together that you may not think are working together here. And that is, you know, it's the neurons. It's all the connections that are happening, right side, left side, front, back, everything. And so, no, it's not lofty. I think it's just trying to get into something deeper. An inner self to let it come out, and how is it going to be expressed? And so that's a neurologic in my mind. That's how I look at it.
I'm crossing boundaries here, but I mean, there are studies now that show that if I raise my hand, certain areas of my brain fire. If you watch me raise my hand, the same areas of your brain fire, as if you had actually moved your muscles.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. So that's...
It's the power of the brain. I mean, it's just the power of what we're seeing and the actual motor movement, et cetera. It's fascinating.
The point about freedom was an interesting one. In that same program on the nightly news that was with the nightly news that they did in public television, one of the people playing music, one of the Alzheimer's people playing music, said that he had it gave him a sense of freedom in a different sense. People look at him and think of him as a patient. Now people look at him and think of him as a musician.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
And that was a liberation that was
really
amazing.
Good.
And in the difficulty, you stop and think of how it must feel when you recognize that you're losing something you've had and you're identified as...
The patient.
A patient.
Exactly.
As opposed to a full functioning person. And if you have music, if you can play music particularly...
Mm-hmm.
If people have questions or comments, you can call or text 312-981-7200. And we do have a call from Tina. Tina, welcome to the show. How are you?
Hi. Good, Dave. How are you?
Okay.
My mom's in the final stages of Alzheimer's. And, you know, up until about 6 months ago or so, she was still able to sing. And we always loved to sing. She was a graduate of North Central College in Naperville. And so what I would do is I'd face her, hold her hands, and we'd start singing the alma mater song. And she would just keep looking at me, but she sang every single word.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's just amazing what the brain does.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, I just have a question for you. Now, is she still singing or did she stop?
It's pretty much nonverbal now.
Okay, is she humming?
Yeah.
You know, we don't give humming enough credit either.
I agree.
The good hum is great. No, really, a good hum.
I can hum
good.
More in tune than yeah. I can sing.
But you know, singing and the words and all that—that's fabulous. But even just humming gets people in that rhythm of doing things. And hum while you know, hum while you work,
her.
And it's just that'd be interesting to know if she's humming.
I would not stop playing music around her, though,
yeah.
even though
no.
she may not be responding to it.
Yeah.
Absolutely, keep her favorite music on.
Yes,
around her.
She loves classical music, and mm-hmm. so we try to keep her radio on to classical most of the time,
because mm-hmm.
yeah. that's what she loves.
She loves, yeah.
And there are groups of students from the school and elsewhere that actually go out and play live music for people as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They do that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I don't do it myself, but there are groups
and
that
And they
do
just
that
contact
regularly.
The Old Town
yeah.
School for if
sure.
they want to do that. Okay.
Well, I used to, every now and then I would play the piano on the reminiscence floor. And, you know, you would walk into the community room and people would just be talking about whatever, you know, things that don't make sense or whatever. And then once I would start to play the music, especially Danny Boy, there were two gentlemen who would immediately start to sing Danny Boy.
Danny Boy, yeah.
That's amazing.
That's nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, it was special.
Well, good luck to you. And thanks for calling, Tina.
Thanks, Dave.
Okay, all right, take care of yourself.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Is all behavior, this is one thing I've heard, mm-hmm. is all behavior communication?
A lot of it is.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. You know, and yeah, that's a really good question because, you know, when we talk about behavior and what behaviors especially come with dementia and Alzheimer's, you know, at times it's, well, you know, I don't want to medicate or I don't want to have someone on medicines. I don't want them looking like a zombie. And I'm always saying, what's the environment like? What's your behavior like to that person? How are you presenting yourself? Because that really can bring out certain behaviors. One thing we have seen, and I've seen this when I've been in facilities and homes, when the music comes on, it calms people. So certain behaviors that may be going on can stop, slow down, and before you know it, the person is completely different. And I think that's something, you know, for caregivers who are listening tonight, find out what music resonates with your loved one. And
yes.
see how the behaviors are with that music and pay attention. Pay attention because that is a very non-medical medicine way to handle some of the behaviors. Now, clearly, some behaviors need to be medicated, but environment is right at the top of my list first before any type of medication. Talk to me. Where are we? What are we doing? When do these behaviors come? You want to have a comment?
Yeah, go ahead.
On behaviors?
I have seen that music can't solve all anxieties, but it can really help.
Mm-hmm.
If you have an individual or loved one who just, like in the afternoon, cannot sit down, but you put on music and you sit with them, it will help get you part of the way.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell people all the time, have music on at the house all the time.
Yeah.
You'll see in facilities, usually, even in the rooms where people are just sitting, there is music on.
Yeah.
The richer the environment, the more stimulation, the more the individual can pull out from themselves. Whatever it is that is still really there.
Yeah.
So Muzak is underrated?
did I say that? A good choice of music.
Yeah, good choice.
I still can't get over Billie Jean's a crowd pleaser,
yeah.
You know what I mean? You know, Bob, you came in at the last minute. Thank you, and thanks for Jamie Caesar. But tell us, I don't know what Urban Balance does, so tell us what your group does.
Well, Urban Balance is a group practice of psychotherapists. We have offices down here on Michigan Avenue through the north side and the north suburbs. We treat all sorts of behaviors, people with whoever gotten out of balance, need that focus to deal with the anxieties and the stressors that come with life. Mm-hmm. So as I said, I deal with a lot of caregivers mm-hmm. of people, you know, with dementia. Other people have other specialties, the young children. We'd have other art therapists on staff, people who deal with abuse and neglect problems. So,
you know, I think it's important that you said caregivers, because the caregivers often, when this occurs, they get left out of the mix a little bit because they're so busy doing. Mm-hmm. There's so many, you know, they're just doing. And sometimes you have to stop and say, okay, I know you do. Let's talk about you. What really helps you? What do you enjoy? And again, music, bringing that up, is it music that you enjoy? And if it is, what do you do with music? Where do you go? Do you play? Do you do this? And because the stress in the caregivers is what I see, the burnout, the stress, the anxiety, and not doing enough. And I keep saying, you are probably doing too much.
I see
Let's pull back, you know?
A lot of guilt.
Yeah, a lot of guilt.
For caregivers yeah. who want to do something for themselves.
Exactly, exactly. And so sometimes as a doctor, I say, it's a doctor order. I even sometimes write it on a prescription. The old-fashioned prescription, I sometimes write, you need to leave the house for 3 hours.
Oh, great.
And you need to bring someone in, and you need to, frankly, get lost and do something for you. And they need it, though, but they say, doctor, I needed you to tell me that. Mm-hmm. Not a family member, not someone else, like, mom, you need a break. And the other thing I do want to just make a point here. Right now, there are so many people who are caregiving for someone who has dementia, especially Alzheimer's disease. Please, please, please tell them that they're doing a good job, because they are so underappreciated. And I cannot tell you how many times people come in my office and I tell them they're doing a good job, they burst into tears. No one has told them that. It's like, well, you know, my sister, she knows how to handle that. She's really good with that. No, tell your sister you appreciate that. Tell the person who's doing this job that you're doing a good job. Let me know. I can help in any way. That means so much to them, because at times they really feel that it's just kind of a given. It's there, or it's part of my duty. And I always say, even married couples, no, you are doing a good job. You know, it's part of my duty. No, you're doing a good job. And I think that's really important, because that relieves the stress. And then that gives them the freedom to say, I'm going to go now and do something for me.
We'll be back. We got to take a break for we'll be back with more Nocturnal Journal after this. Don't go away.
Purple sky, all the birds are leaving. But how can they know it's time for them to go? Before the winter fire, I will still be dreaming.
Welcome back to the Nocturnal Journal on 720 WGN. We're talking about music and dementia. Do you want to play sad songs around Alzheimer's patients, like Sandy Denny there? it's a little evocative. Yeah. But Skip, you were telling me about melodies. How can they reconnect personal feelings and stuff like that? Just tell me how that works.
Well, again, it's the sound. It's the soundtrack of the soundtrack of your lives, of your life. And if you grew up, actually, my mother-in-law is a good case of this. In fact, she complains when people make music at Lincolnwood, where she is staying, and they do music from the Civil War and from World War I. She wants World War II music. Yeah. That's the soundtrack of her life. She was a wave, but I think that my sense is that all music, that what we want to do is give people music that will appeal them individually. So we do such a range of music at the school. We do everything, as I said, from the old things to Wilco and to mm-hmm. to the Decemberists and to other contemporary groups. And the point for me always is finding songs for any individual student that really speak to him. I currently have a student who is I should know whether he's the Army or Marines, but he's in the armed services. I think he's in the Army, and he wanted the Star Spangled Banner on harmonica because this is an upright representative of the military, and he wants those songs. He wants the Battle Hymn of the Republic, and those are the songs that speak to him.
Mm-hmm. Doctor, tell us exactly what the Rush Alzheimer's Disease Center, what you do there, and mm-hmm. you said people come in. Right. Fill us in on how that works.
Right. So the Alzheimer's Disease Center, the Rush Alzheimer's Disease Center, is one of the federally funded research center, and that's an important point because
one of 29 in the U.S. I read
exactly, yeah. I'm making a point about that because it's not only do we provide clinical care and evaluation for people who have memory issues and not sure if it's a dementia, we also get multiple referrals from around the city for second opinions. Is this a dementia or not? And is this Alzheimer dementia? Or is it one of those other types that I talked about earlier? The one other arm, though, that's we're really passionate about is also research into Alzheimer's disease. So we not only do clinical trials, which I do many of the trials with my other colleagues at Rush, for trials for Alzheimer's disease, prevention of Alzheimer's disease, et cetera. But we're also doing a lot of studies in the field. So when I say the field, I'm talking the community. We do a lot of community studies, and we do studies where we see people in their houses and we follow them as they're well and as they age and what happens as they age. So that has been helping us look at answer some research questions. When does the changes in memory occur? Are they associated with things such as change in movement, behavior? And how early are these things occurring? I work a lot in the minority communities here in Chicago, in the minority neighborhoods. And I have to say this, you know, again to everyone listening and even the panel here, we are seeing dementia and of the Alzheimer type dementia really, really hitting our minority populations very hard. And, you know, 2 to 3 times the rates of dementia and Alzheimer's disease coming in are African American, Latino. The Asians are coming in here now. We're reaching our Asians. We're seeing these numbers. And wow. And what's happening here is, because I'm in the field so much, the awareness is we're doing a better job with awareness of what's happening, but we're still missing the mark. People are living with this disease in the community. This disease plays out in the community. I always say that. It is not at the clinic. It's in the community. And so we have to reach our people there. So we try to have a multi-pronged approach in what we do, and we offer a lot of different things for people to get involved, either for diagnosis or for trials right now, which are really, really coming on strong.
Such as, give me an example of that, and also tell me how people get in touch with
yeah,
you.
Yeah, so there are many, many trials, and one of the ways to think about trials is that it's based on staging, what we kind of talked about before. So we have now trials that are trials with people who do not have dementia. There's a trial called A4, okay? It's an asymptomatic Alzheimer trial. This is the first trial that we're doing where people have no dementia, no trouble with memory, and we're going to take a picture of their brain, and we're going to look at the amyloid in the brain, that amyloid plaque. And if that level is high enough above a threshold, we are going to offer a medication, investigational medicine, to see if we can slow down any memory issues. And the deal with that study is we know these changes are occurring way earlier before it outwardly signs. So we have to move that. Then we have other trials that are going to be looking at Alzheimer's disease, the diagnosis of Alzheimer's disease. So someone has a diagnosis, they can come in. So the best thing to do to talk to us about the trials, you can go on our website, of course, www.radc.edu. You can call us at the RADC. You can call our clinic if you need an appointment for evaluation. I also want to mention the A4 study is a landmark study, okay? This is a landmark study. We've never done something like this before where we are imaging first, if you will. We are partnering with Northwestern on this study because it's so huge. So again, both centers are doing this study. I'm asking people to really think about getting engaged and really start learning about the process, the life course, and what's available.
Okay, we're going to take a break for the news, and we'll be back with more Nocturnal Journal after this. Don't go away.
Get older. Valentine's. Birthday greetings, bottle of wine. If I've been out till 2:45, would you lock the door?
Welcome back to the Nocturnal Journal on 720 WGN.
That keeps you sharp.
We're having a discussion. That was 40% of the band. We're going to get to them in a minute. Strictly Jug Nuts. Thanks.
Not
for
a song we don't do.
What are you playing? What are you? You were playing a jug, and what is that thing?
This is a spamazoo. Yeah. A kazoo made from a spam can.
Okay. So now this would work
this
in an environment? This would work in an environment like that? Is it fun and loose?
Yeah. Absolutely.
I'll tell you.
We have played at senior centers, and it's great.
Tell me how that works out when you come in.
We played for my mom's 90th birthday when she was still living in Indiana, and they said it was the best show they'd ever had.
Really?
Yeah.
So do you do a lot of that?
No. But we would do more.
You would do more, yeah. And you're wearing the costume period and stuff? And,
we dress up. All our clothes are from resale shops.
Yeah. that's great.
And we do workshops demonstrating all the instruments, so someone can walk up and try the washboard or try the wash tub bass. Neither one of which is here tonight, but the idea is it's participatory music.
Yeah. Yeah. I never thought I'd see spam be used that way. That's awesome.
It's
spam can.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Did you make that?
Yes, of course.
Of course. Yeah. Exactly.
There's a class at the Old Town School that helps you learn to make these things and learn to play them too.
Oh, very nice.
And that's one. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Then that's one of the reasons that we're invited every year to the Skokie Spring Greening, which this year is in the middle of April. Our music is it's recycled music. We wear clothes from resale shops, and many of our instruments are improvised out of simple things. Now that's a spamazoo. I also play, although neglected to bring my canjo, which is two cans connected by a wire, through which we get a very unusual sound We can play on most songs. It works with all songs, actually.
After we take a break for the commercials, you guys will hang around and play another song. I want to wrap up this segment.
Something we really know.
Yeah, yeah, right. That's good.
But I'll tell you something about that improvisation and the mistakes. Being honest like that in front of dementia sufferers really comes home. Mm-hmm. They like being part of that. The emotion, the raw emotion of just stumbling. Mm-hmm. Really,
that's interesting.
They understand that.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, it humanizes.
Speaks, and it speaks to the thing of keep it going. Keep it going. Don't get stuck. And it's so important. And it's important for the brain. Keep it going. Keep it going. Because not only do you keep, the brain gets activated, it gets in a different state. It's using different things. And that's the feeling of I just kept moving.
Yeah.
Versus stuck. Exactly. Flow.
Yeah.
Don't get stuck.
Oh, so we really did that on purpose.
Yeah, there you go.
Before we have to break for this, tell us what we were talking about during the break about transitions to facilities at the right time when all that is done.
Yeah, thanks. That's a really good point. There's I see a lot of people who struggle with bringing their loved ones into a facility, and they often wait too long. Mm-hmm. A transition is very hard, on all of us, mm-hmm. especially when you're elderly. It takes a toll on the body and the brain. Mm-hmm. And often people go downhill a little bit more in that transition. So they're not able then to take advantage of the richness of the environment. Mm-hmm. A lot of great facilities in the Chicago area now. So my advice, and I think almost any professional that someone would talk to would say, sooner than later.
Right.
We really can engage in the fullness of life if you get there with
you. And sometimes an evaluation can really help here, because it's really hard for a family member to make that. Sometimes, again, it has to be from the health professional or doctor saying, here's where we are now. This is what we're thinking. Have you thought about this? To start the discussion, and this is the biggest thing we deal with dementia. People don't want to talk about some things. But again, it's how you present it. It is how you're going to present this so that you can build on. There's richness in the facilities. Take advantage of that. Get there. But you're right. People come in too late. Decisions are made in crisis. And then everybody is upset about that whole thing.
The one thing I've learned in the journey with my mom is that the moving around, a lot of times, that kicks, the way I explain it to people, it seems to kick into dementia. After there was times she's not doing it now, times we were going to the hospital, and she'd come back from the hospital stay, and she'd be all over the place.
Exactly. The hospital is a different creature from a residential facility.
Yeah. People take a hit. I always say it, people take a hit when they come in, even for something very minor that you think is so minor. There is that, and I tell people, you know what? Expect this. They're not going to be the same coming back out, even for something very minor. We think it's overwhelm.
Yeah,
there's too much stimuli. Yeah, there's too much stimuli going on. Any kind of pattern is disrupted. Anyone who's been in a hospital knows that you don't sleep in a hospital. They're constantly coming in, doing stuff. People coming in a room, like, who are you? What are you? This seems to be taking a big toll on people, and the reserve may not be there to bounce back. So when they get discharged, people get discharged, they'll say, doctor, oh my goodness, what happened? Give it some time and get back into routine. But there is that. I call it the hit. It's the hit.
One reason I wanted to do this segment is people of our age, I mean, you're talking about the super agers and stuff, and I wanted to hit on this when you were talking about caregivers. What's the ratio of caregivers and doctors and stuff to so many people that are going to be going through this? It's going to be an explosion.
You know what? It is not going to be. It is now. And I think everyone here who's in the field who sees this, we see it. We do not have enough caregivers for all the people that we feel are going to need care, number one. The caregiving is informal. So what it means, it's the daughter and daughter-in-laws typically who are really doing the bulk of the care. We see that consistently. And that is causing a lot of issues with family, stress in the family. Often the daughter or daughter-in-law has to pull back from work. And it's there. Exactly. I have the hand waving, folks. You know, you can speak to what you had to do for caregiving. I mean, what happened with the caregiving?
It's been a very hard few years. Yeah. But I actually, what I wanted to say is about getting people in at the right time. Mm-hmm. My mother had a number of incidents of falls and a couple of seizures. And she was in the hospital, and I had to get into Indiana. And my sisters and I had been trying to get her to move out of her house. And she said, I can't leave the house Henry built for me. Mm-hmm. And the doctor said, what would he want for you now?
Yeah.
And she finally realized he wouldn't want her to be alone in this house. Mm-hmm. And she felt so good when she got into a community. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, there is that disorientation when you first make that move.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then moving again into the Chicago area, another disorientation. But once they adjust,
And that's part of the caregiving.
It takes time to adjust.
Exactly. And then that's the worry of the caregiving. Did I do the right thing? And
that speaks to the guilt.
Yeah. Did I do the right thing? Yeah. And it's
and the financial worries.
Exactly.
Because good places cost a lot of money.
Yeah.
And then we have to worry for ourselves. Are we going to be able to afford it for ourselves?
Right, exactly.
Who's going to watch out for us?
Yeah, right.
That's
for
right.
For sure, yeah. What was your last thing to wrap it up? What was your window into this? How did you all get involved in this field? What made you want to pursue this?
Well, why didn't you go first?
The longest, 30 years of advertising.
Oh, I didn't know that. Really?
At a career change, I just enjoy now helping people with their problems and being appreciated for it. In advertising, they were giving me a big check, and they said, well, what else are you going to do for me?
That's interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah, and so this was not a population I was initially going for, and I had a fortunate opening that I walked into, and I loved it. It's just the joy, again, the daily successes of the individuals that I worked with just brought so much joy to me.
Same question for you, Skip.
I think the Old Town School recognized that more and more people were available during the day, largely because they'd retired. And I got involved in the Concordia program because my approach to many of the teachers, I think we're all interested in bringing music into people's lives. Some are more interested in the history and bring people into the tradition of blues or the tradition of Irish music. And my interest was more broad in terms of the music that speaks to you. So in my classes, if someone is interested in Irish music, I will give them Irish songs. Mm-hmm. If they're interested in Wilco, I'll try to find a Wilco song I can provide. Mm-hmm. So that's my angle. Yeah.
Did you grow up around here?
No, actually, my grandfather was a Chicago copper, but I'm a recovering New Yorker.
Oh, okay.
So I came out to the University of Chicago many years ago and never looked back. And so now I'm a little. I normally don't tell people I came from New York. I pretend that I was born here and I adopted a high school and things like that.
And same question for you, Doctor.
You know, I always was fascinated with the brain, and so for me to go into a specialty when I finished medical school, neurology was a specialty for me, and I knew that I would do neurology. And then, you know, while I was in training, I was looking at all the various, you know, conditions for neurology. It's a big field. You know, we deal with a lot of different things. It's really the brain, spinal cord, nerve, muscle. I was seeing people coming in with cognitive issues and not thinking right and seeing what it did to people losing independence, that they were now becoming dependent or they needed more help with things. And I thought, you know, if I can do something to ease that, if it's, you know, prevent it, of course, but if it's there, what can we do to ease that? And what can we bring treatments in that can make it less debilitating? And that's how I got into the aging and neurodegenerative field, dementia, and then came here to Chicago and was very, very fortunate that I could really have a clinical practice, but also in the field and do the research there to marry it together. And that's really important because I'm able to be in the houses and see what's happening when people are doing well and then you see them next year and they're not. And what happened? And why did that happen? And trying to figure out treatments and what's the best way to handle, especially dementia and Alzheimer's disease.
All of you, is there a way you can describe the feeling you have when you actually connect with somebody and that connection is made and you see that response? Mm-hmm. Just spiritually, what's that in all of you, mm-hmm. what you do, what's that like?
Joy. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Just joy.
Mm-hmm. And I'd like to point out that all three of us are associated with the Old Town School.
All right. Yeah.
My colleagues here have participated in classes, and I think it is that it's joy. It's also something. I think it's a connection. I think many of us, as you make music, you recognize it's without being too. Vague about this, well, being entirely vague about it, actually, is I think there's something spiritual in music. I think you connect to something beyond yourself and beyond, probably beyond rationality, and I think that's what is so special about it.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you. This was a little different for the old Nocturnal Journal, but I hope it was helpful for people, and thank you all for coming down here, and for trials.
Yep.
You can contact the Rush Alzheimer's Disease Center at 312-947-RADC.
Yeah.
Okay? Well, thanks so much. I learned a lot tonight, so thank you for coming down. We'll have some jug music after this, so don't go away.